Welcome to Brian Ruse Show. It's October the 10th, 2020. I have John Friend as my guest. He's my very first guest on the Brian Ruse Show on 5 years ago on September 28th, 2015. So it's great to have you back. Welcome to the show, John.
Brian, yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's been a while, so it's good to catch up with you. I hope all is well. I know you've been doing a lot of really good work. I follow your work on BitChute and see some of the videos that you do, and you know, I tip my hat to you. You're a very brave and courageous man out there in the streets going to some of these protests. And sounds like lately you've kind of been getting involved with the whole lockdown and face mask issue with this COVID-19 total hoax.
Yeah,
I mean, this situation is just so out of control. It's quickly dwarfing 9/11 and some of these other major game-changing events, it seems like.
Yeah. But I've been following you too. You're still producing interviews with the Realist Report and writing essays. You just tell the audience that you write for American Free Press and the Barnes Review. You're still very active there. You're an excellent writer, brilliant young man. It's great to have you back. So, yeah, I remember you were telling me that lately the Department of Homeland Security has stated that the biggest single issue is white supremacists. So we had a bit of a laugh over that. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, sure. And this is a topic that I've covered for the newspaper and the magazine in the past. And it's, you know, this idea, this meme, this narrative that has been promoted by the government and the media for a very long time. And it's literally like concocted by groups like the ADL. I mean, this, you read this Homeland Security report and it reads as if it was written by the ADL. And it, you know, they basically use the same talking points as the ADL. And yeah, it's something, again, it's, you know, this report comes out every year, and it seems like every year they're basically saying the same thing, that, you know, quote unquote, white supremacists are the greatest threat in the United States. You know, they won't even mention BLM or Antifa or any of these other, you know, radical left-wing communist groups that have attacked people, that have engaged in wanton violence, criminality, looting. You know, they've defaced and torn down monuments all over the country and, you know, looted countless businesses and stores. And, you know, lately, I mean, they're even going into, you know, like residential neighborhoods and, you know, confronting and harassing, you know, just average people in their homes. So, I mean, these people are out of control and the government won't condemn them. They won't even investigate them, it seems like. And they want to point to quote unquote white supremacists as like this major threat facing the country. It's just absolutely ridiculous and insulting for anybody that's paying attention. It totally is. I mean, this entire world is totally inverted. You know, politics is just a total joke anymore. And I hate to say it, that includes even under President Trump. I mean, I do want to see him reelected. But at the end of the day, you know, he's not even really doing anything about any of this besides tweeting about it. And, you know, he even in that there was all the uproar at the recent debate with Joe Biden, where he didn't forcefully condemn, you know, white supremacists enough, as they say in the media.
Yeah, but he's done it before.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then the very next day he went on Sean Hannity on Fox News and, you know, of course, condemned the Proud Boys, condemned white supremacists, condemned the KKK. I mean, these people act like the KKK is even like a relevant organization anymore.
Yeah.
Or like white, quote unquote, white supremacist. First off, what is a white supremacist?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
genuinely.
So feeble. What is it? Yeah, it's certainly not an issue.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I mean, I genuinely don't even know anybody that like literally is a white supremacist. I mean, it's just a totally weaponized word that's used by the government and the media to demonize anybody that's even taking a pro-white stance. I mean, literally being like pro-white and caring about white people and caring about the future of white people in our countries and our history and our heritage. I mean, you're deemed a white supremacist, a racist, you know, a neo-Nazi. They use these weaponized slurs to discredit people and to basically dehumanize them, right? I mean, that's essentially what this amounts to. And yeah, this latest report that came out from Homeland Security, they had been like hinting at it for the past few weeks, and the report actually like officially came out recently. And I read about it. There was actually a decent article kind of highlighting it in the Jewish Telegraph Agency that was published on October 6th, so about 4 days ago. And yeah, I mean, it's really just incredible that, you know, we could see our country being literally destroyed by radical left-wing terrorists who are rioting and looting and engaging in all of this criminality without really any repercussions, without any consequences. I mean, even the ones that actually do get arrested, 90% of the time they're let off by the local DA. I mean, that, you know, there's all sorts of reports pointing this out and demonstrating this. You know, these people, if they do actually get arrested or have any charges filed against them, they're quickly dismissed and they're let right back onto the streets without any consequences to engage in the same exact destructive, violent, terroristic behavior that they've been carrying on with for basically the most of the year at this point. I mean, it's going on, what, 6 months now that this has been going on.
Well, maybe they feel they have to release them to deal with all those white supremacists out there, you know, because they need to stop these white supremacists to keep it balanced or something, I guess.
Yeah, I know. It's insane.
Double standard.
You know, it's incredible, too, because these people are out in the streets protesting and rioting and looting over people that are just total thugs and total criminals. I mean, you look at like every one of these major like triggering events in like the Black Lives Matter movement, whether it was Trayvon Martin or Freddie Gray, the criminal drug dealer in Baltimore. Yeah. Or what was the guy in Ferguson, Missouri? Michael Brown, was that his name, I think? I think that was his name. Yeah. I mean, that guy, you know, George Floyd in Minneapolis, basically every single instance you really look into what happened, you read the police reports, you read like what actually happened from eyewitnesses, you know, the people that are actually professionally investigating this, not what the mainstream mass media is saying. And it turns out that these people are literal criminals that frankly got what they deserved every single time. And the cops did nothing wrong. I mean, you know, I certainly have some criticism of law enforcement, especially, you know, in the past 10 years or so, that the total like Israelification of law enforcement and, you know, how they're brainwashed with, you know, Holocaust propaganda, and many of them are trained in Israel. Like literally they're flown to Israel, at least like the police chiefs, like the high level, you know, police chiefs around the country and also the FBI and stuff like that. You know, these people are going to Israel to be brainwashed and indoctrinated by the Israeli Defense Forces, essentially. But that being said, you know, they're operating in very difficult environments. They have a target on them. The media is totally dishonest and basically frames everything as like a white, like it's blamed on like racism, like these racist white cops, you know, killed, murdered George Floyd and these other criminals, when it's just a total, again, it's totally inverted. And 9 times out of 10, a lot of the officers involved aren't even white to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, I think
just look at the statistics of all the black crime against white cops, far more than white cop crime against blacks. And blacks, you know, kill whites like 8 times more than whites kill blacks. The statistics are just so, so powerful. And then the media just ignores that.
Yeah. I mean, it truly is. I think that's the best way to put it. It's like a total inversion of reality, and it's the media that does this. You know, the media, and again, this is another good thing about Trump, is he's at least been very critical of the media and has, you know, done his best to discredit them. And I think he has in the minds of a lot of people in this country, certainly, even like, you know, your sort of normie like Trump supporting conservative MAGA, you know, MAGA-pede type person. They recognize how dishonest the mainstream mass media really is. You know, it is the new, it is the fake news media. And Trump has openly called them the enemy of the people, and they absolutely are, you know, for what they're doing. They're totally inverting reality, distorting and just smearing honest, decent people trying to make a living and trying to do what's right. So it's incredible. It's really out of control. And I mean, now we have
fake news is the household term now, fake news, because of President Trump. So he's added that to the world's vocabulary. So that's good.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, love him or hate him, you got to recognize that the political and media establishment absolutely despise Trump and want to see him out of office. And I mean, that's what they've been, that's what they've been doing for the past 5 years now. I mean, even before he was elected president, they were doing everything in their power to discredit him, to prevent him from running, to, you know, overturn the presidential election. I mean, that's what Russiagate was. That's what all of these fake news, you know, totally manufactured scandals have been an attempt to do, is to basically overthrow the president of the United States. And we're certainly seeing that now leading up to this 2020 election.
But I want to ask you, do you feel that this has had the opposite effect? And do you think it's made people more sympathetic for Trump, more suspicious of the media, thinking, well, I'm glad we did elect him, you know, because these Democrats are lying all the time? Do you think this is actually supporting Trump?
That's a good question. I think certainly in America is so polarized, you know, people either like love Trump or they absolutely hate him. That's, you know, it's very, very, very polarized. Yeah. And America was polarized even before.
He's the most polarized figure in the world, I think.
He is. But I mean, think about like Obama, President Obama was a very polarizing president as well. You know, you had his supporters that loved him, and then the conservatives, the Republicans, on the other hand, absolutely despised the man for good reason. And it's the same with President Trump, maybe even more so. I think at least in the eyes of his supporters, the way the media has treated him, all these manufactured fake scandals, and now, you know, again, leading up to this upcoming election, I mean, we're literally seeing like a color revolution, an attempted color revolution play out here in the United States. And this is gaining mainstream traction. All the signs are there. I mean, you look at how like the CIA and the State Department and all these, international NGOs, you know, funded by like guys like George Soros, for example, how they destabilize and overthrow other governments overseas, like what happened in Ukraine, what happened in, Iran back in the 50s. You know, they allege that an election is illegitimate or fraudulent, or there was, you know, election fraud or whatever, voter fraud. And then the media comes in and discredits and demonizes the elected leader. And there's protests, you know, people in the streets causing chaos and violence and mayhem. And again, this is exactly what the whole year 2020 has been, nothing but, you know, a lead up to a color revolution in the United States. And I mean, I think that's certainly what's going to happen, you know, come election day.
So what do you mean by color revolution? You don't mean racial, do you?
No, like a color revolution. They term these
like party or flag.
Well, I mean, if you just like Google the idea of a color revolution, it's basically, you know, like a CIA manufactured, you know, revolution overseas. It happened especially in the former Soviet Union, but also in the Middle East, where these outside groups come in and they fund like these protest movements to destabilize and ultimately overthrow like a sovereign regime. It's currently happening in Belarus. I mean, look what's happening in Belarus, for example. And all the signs are here that it's happening in the United States as well. And I think this election is going to be total chaos. And, you know, we're not really going to know who actually won. I mean, there's so many problems with all these mail-in voting now, and, you know, the alleged coronavirus pandemic is just complicating things even further. So it's just a total mess. Our country is a total mess. It's falling apart.
I'm hoping Trump will win with a big enough size that it won't be contested. It'll be obvious that he won, you know. What do you think? Of course, we don't know.
Well, I mean, I think just in my personal experience, and I mean, again, I'm in Southern California, and there are a lot. I mean, you see like Biden Harris signs from time to time, but almost everybody I know, almost everybody I talk to and deal with, I mean, everybody's basically a Trump supporter and wants to see the president reelected.
Well, you're San Diego. That's good. I mean, I thought California was so left. That's good to hear.
Well, it is generally, like, overall, it very much is. But yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of red-blooded Americans in California, even in Southern California, that's for sure. But I don't see any real enthusiasm for the Democrats. I mean, you look at, like, you watch the debates. I didn't watch it, but I listened to a lot of the vice presidential debate And I mean, this woman, Kamala Harris, is just so, oh my gosh, she's just so disgraceful, so despicable.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the whole thing. She was evasive. She's a liar. I mean, I thought Pence did a really good job. I was really impressed with Pence and his patience, his maturity, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Pence was very composed. He was very rational and, like, just straightforward. And Kamala Harris came across to me as very unhinged, very condescending. She was just a smug, nasty woman. And I'm wondering, like, who does this appeal to? Like, who is actually like, oh, wow, Kamala Harris did a great job. Like, I really like this woman. No, nobody. I mean, these people are a joke.
Why and, her? Why are they?
And president and Joe Biden as well. I mean, these yeah. people are just. It's incredible that people would actually support the Democrats. I mean, I basically don't know a single person that is. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a lot of hidden support for Trump. You know, people don't want to, you know, have their home like vandalized or assaulted, or they don't want to be harassed for hanging up a Trump sign. So there's a lot of people that are kind of, you know, in the silent majority, so to speak. So we'll see. I mean, I tend to think, I mean, if we had an honest, you know, decent media and you know, just honorable, like somewhat honest, you know, like election system, I think it'd be clear that Trump is going to win, but they're going to do everything in their power to undermine the legitimacy of the votes. Yeah. They're going to, you know, try to throw the election in favor of Biden. Yeah.
They've done it before in other countries. They could do it here.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll see. It's, you know, we're what, only 3 weeks away, I think, from the election, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So it's coming up pretty quick. But, you know, again, going back to the debates, you know, watching not only the presidential debate, but the vice presidential debate, it really just underscores like just how fake and ridiculous politics is in general. I mean, they're not talking about anything of substance. And a lot of the narratives and a lot of the talking points and even the questions, like the way the questions are framed, it's based on, you know, fake history and fake science. And I mean, they're talking about climate change, which is a total communist hoax. They're talking about the coronavirus pandemic, which is
a total medical hoax.
Yeah, entirely.
It's like all these politicians have to go along with it. Trump and Pence as well, you know. I mean, yeah, even on climate change, he was kind of waffling a bit on it, that it seemed like he didn't come right out and say it was a hoax.
Yeah. Well, John Kaminsky, who I'm pretty sure you've interviewed, I've interviewed him a few times.
Oh, yeah, many times, John Kaminsky. Yeah, he's the wise old man when it comes to Jewish power in the world.
yeah, he's a legend. He's a great writer.
Great writer. He's the best writer, yeah.
Yeah. I've learned a lot from John Kaminsky over the years. In fact, he was one of the first sort of dissident, you know, I guess, anti-Jewish writers out there that I came across. And, you know, he's a very, very powerful, eloquent writer.
He told me like 20 years ago, people called him anti-Semitic. Like, he was one of the very first, and now they're inviting him back on the shows. He was kicked off of shows because he was one of the very first saying, it's the Jews, the elite Jews.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, yeah, he paved the way for us, for you and me.
Exactly, yeah. But he's come up with this idea of an artificial reality, and how we're like operating in an artificial reality. And you watch the debates, and that's exactly what it is. It's like this total artificial reality that we're operating in, and that these candidates are forced to discuss these issues in. I mean, they're not, again, like I said, they're not even talking about legitimate issues facing the country, like the radical left and BLM and Antifa destroying the country, like the ongoing invasion of the United States and other Western countries, like these insane, never-ending, ridiculous wars in the Middle East, like the reality of Jewish power and influence in the country and what that has led to. You know, there's a lot of very important issues facing the country that are just not even addressed or brought up or, you know, openly discussed, certainly not by, you know, mainstream political leaders, but I mean, even in the media, in fact, is the main cause of all of this, I think. So it's a mess, and politics itself is sort of just a joke. Everything is so fake, and it's all, again, like I said, based on fake ridiculous narratives and ideas and this artificial reality that we're forced to operate in.
Kind of reminds you of the Soviet Union with Pravda. People knew it was fake. They knew it was a lie. But here, many people don't understand that the media is all owned by Jews, that it's fake news. A lot of people don't get that. So in a way, it's worse here than it was under the Soviet Union.
Yeah, it probably is at this point. I mean, it's pretty bad, and it's almost like you have to laugh about it, like how just absurd everything is, you know, just to keep your sanity, I guess, because you see what's going on, and you see how even people that sort of they recognize that there's a lot of problems and that the media is lying to them and is very dishonest and it's fake news like we've been talking about, but there's still so much that they don't get.
Yeah,
you know, they don't get the Jewish angle. They don't get, you know, how we've been lied to and deceived for so long about so many events.
Yeah,
you know, we've talked about, you know, I think the first interview we did, we focused a lot of attention on World War II and Hitler and the fake Jewish Holocaust.
Yeah, I call it John Friend's inspiring speech on Adolf Hitler. You're the best and the first in talking about Hitler. So inspired. I reissued that video. Yeah, if you want to talk Adolf Hitler, he's still like the. I remember he said he was the greatest leader in Western history, hands down. Like, yay.
Yeah, you know, and it's so true. And I know that's a very controversial thing for people to hear, and to even attempt to objectively entertain. But it's just straight up true. I mean, you know, you look at what he said. You read a book like Mein Kampf. You look at what his political movement and his whole agenda was, you know, he was openly exposing what was going on in Germany. He was openly dealing with the problems and explaining it to people in a very straightforward, rational, clear way. You know, he was making moves to protect his country and to get his country back on the right track to make Germany great again. And objectively, he accomplished those
Germany
goals.
Great again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a politician doing that today, telling the truth about international Jewish power and the Federal Reserve and the banking system and getting rid of that? Can you imagine that happening?
Well, see. Yeah, that's why, world, talk about it, inversion. I mean, literally World War II is the total opposite of what we've been taught, basically. And that's the main reason why. That's why Hitler is so demonized. And, you know, you can't even, you know, you learn about, like, Hitler growing up as a kid. And it's a lot of it's based on Hollywood and, you know, some of these movies and stuff. But, I mean, even, like, you look at, like, your average, like, history book. And it doesn't even, like, really address or discuss what he was saying, what he was doing, what his policies were, why he was, you know, so critical of the Jews and what they were doing. Like, you don't even get a glimpse into what he was really all about. It's just this Hollywood boogeyman, and he's just this demonized, you know, hysterically demonized person that is just like this crazed evil maniac is the way he's presented, which is not at all the case. So it's sad. I mean, you know, we could be learning objective history. We could be reading like a book like Mein Kampf and actually figuring out what he actually said and what he was trying to do.
Also, look what he did in his first 7 years of his administration, turning the country around, uplifting them morally and ethically and getting their spirit up and economically. Just look at what he did. I mean, we can't do that because of the Holocaust. You can't even look at that because of the Holocaust. How dare you even discuss that? So I think they need the Holocaust to prevent people from looking at the practical things he accomplished and how we could do it too, right?
Yes. Oh yeah, 100%. I think that's exactly right. And you know, again, this is something we've talked about before, but like the whole narrative of World War II, especially like the fake Holocaust story, it really is the blueprint of the New World Order system that we live under now. You know, everything from open borders to political correctness to like this anti-white, this anti-white white genocide agenda is all based around the fake World War II narrative.
We got to prevent another Holocaust. Going to nip it in the bud. We can't let these white people getting together like a Trump rally, all these white people. We got to stop this. It's going to lead to another Holocaust.
Yeah. And I mean, you have and this was a theme in the last election and in the 2016 election, you know, leading up to it. You know, the media was hysterical in like condemning Trump and comparing him to Hitler. And you see the same thing even still today. It's astonishing, especially, you know, for people like us who can see through this and recognize what's going on. But yeah, I mean, that's
improved. Do you think since 2012, like Dennis Wise had Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told documentary? I mean, do you think the needle's moved a bit from maybe 3% to 10 or 15% of the people have some awareness that there's something up about Hitler we've been lied about? You know, do you think there's any?
Yes. Improvement? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think the alternative independent media has made a lot of progress in this regard. And, you know, it's thanks to people like us that have been on the front line saying these things,
yeah,
despite all the challenges and, you know, problems that come with doing this sort of work. And
you know, like Monica Schaefer being in jail, and her brother Alfred's in jail now, the 4-year, 8-month sentence, I mean, getting letters from him. And Monica, she's now the president of Truth and Justice for German Society. I'm glad you had her on your show. Yeah, those of us in the front lines, I think we're making a difference, you know, and we're reasonable people. We're not skinhead Nazis out there, you know, spreading hate.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's so true. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think we made some progress. I mean, you look at like pretty much everybody at this point, like in the pro-white alternative media is sort of more or less gets that, you know, the Holocaust doesn't really add up. You know, Hitler maybe wasn't this evil monster that we've been led to believe. So yeah, I think there's been a lot of progress made. There's still a lot more that needs to be made, obviously. But yeah, no, I think it's cool. You know, we've seen a lot of changes over the course of the past. Oh, let's see. I mean, I've been doing this for almost 10 years, probably over 10 years, actually, now that I think about it.
I was a new kid on the block. I just started 2014. Then you and I, we both got fired around the same time. We should tell the audience. It was like the summer of 2015. You got fired from your job and I got fired from my teaching job by the same suspects. So someone emailed me and said, Brian, you should talk to this John friend. He just lost his job too. So that's how you and I met.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and the funny thing was back in 2013, even before, so I've basically had two separate, and basically you could say I've lost two separate jobs as a result of doing this sort of work. But yeah, the first time was in 2013 and then again in 2015, which is what you were just referring to. And, I mean, think about that, like that was pretty, I mean, I don't want to say pretty rare at the time, but now, I mean, think about how many people have lost their jobs just in the past, since Trump has been elected, basically. People that aren't even saying the things that we're saying, people that are just, you know, sort of more mainstream Trump-supporting conservatives that have been persecuted and targeted and either fired or, you know, people are getting attacked physically in the streets, you know, for being even just a Trump supporter. So things have really ratcheted up big time.
Yeah, and, think of freedom of speech in America. It's really gone. If you want your job, then you don't have freedom of speech. It's really a shame.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, we love to pride ourselves on the First Amendment and freedom of speech and freedom of association, but we don't really have either at this point, at least not in the way that we should. I mean, you think about like social media. Social media is basically like the public space at this point. And, you know, I haven't been on Facebook for years now, and I don't plan on going back on Facebook, but, you know, try going on Facebook and posting about the Jews or posting about revisionism or 9/11 or any of these other, you know, more controversial topics that we've addressed, and you'll quickly be kicked off the platform. Same thing with YouTube, same thing with pretty much any major social media outlet. I've been on Twitter for, I don't even know when I
originally signed up. Me too, since 2009.
I was going to say, I mean, thank God, I haven't really had too many issues with Twitter. I've had like my account locked a couple times or, you know, where you have like a, what do they do? Like a, it's like a 24-hour suspension or whatever.
Put you in jail.
Or not even, it's not even really a suspension. It's just like your account's locked for a period of time or whatever. And you have to like remove an offending tweet or whatever. So, but I mean, that's only happened a few times, you know, maybe once or twice. So, but again, I'm not really on Twitter to, you know, attack people or anything. I kind of just use it to post interesting articles. And, you know, I engage with, you know, some people to a limited extent. It's mostly just you. I mostly just use it to tweet stuff that I want to go back and reference, you know, in interviews or maybe in articles and stuff like that. So I almost use it more as like a resource rather than, you know, what most people use social media for, you know, to outright express themselves and give their takes on things.
You also tell people about your Realist Report and how can they donate to you and find you on Realist Report? Is it realistreport.com, right?
Yes. Yeah. The website is therealistreport.com. And I have my Twitter feed embedded right in the right-hand sidebar of the website, so you can find me on Twitter right there as well.
I'll put that below this video, the link to therealistreport.com.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's pretty easy to find, therealistreport.com, and then I'm on Twitter at realistreport.
What about American Free Press and Barnes Review? Is there a link to that where they can read your stuff?
Yeah. I post pretty much anything that's published. Let me explain it this way. Basically, the newspaper, it's a biweekly newspaper, national print newspaper. I'm contributing anywhere between 2 to 4 articles every issue. And a lot of the articles that are published in the paper don't actually make it onto the website. So, I mean, I would encourage everybody, of course, to actually subscribe to the print newspaper. I've always been a newspaper guy. I mean, geez, going back to when I was like in middle school and high school, I'd wake up every day and read the newspaper. You know, I've always kind of been interested and just fascinated by newspapers in general. And of course, it's, you know, a good way to inform yourself. Although now, you know, the internet's kind of played that role. But yeah. I've always been a, you know, into news, like a physical newspaper. So, yeah, I would.
You're a good writer too. News and writing, yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. You can subscribe to the print publication. And then any articles that are actually published on the American Free Press's website, I will also publish those on my website and then, you know, link back to the original American Free Press article. So most of the articles that are posted, well, actually all of the articles that are posted by American Free Press on their website, they will end up on my website as well. But their website is AmericanFreePress.net. And then the Barnes Review is a bi-monthly, so it's every 2 months we publish an issue, so 6 issues a year. And the Barnes Review is outstanding. I really, really encourage people to subscribe to
it. Yeah, I've got the Barnes Review. It is excellent. It's a really good magazine. It's like the last of its kind, American Free Press, the last free speech paper.
Yeah, it really is. In the Barnes Review, especially, I mean, the Barnes Review is, it's like the subtitle is a journal of politically incorrect history. And it's named after, I mean, Willis Cardo founded both American Free Press and the Barnes Review, the late Willis Cardo, I should say.
Yeah, I remember when I first met you, you told me about him. I didn't know about him. You described what a hero he was of yours. And it goes back to the 50s, you know?
Yeah. He's a legend. Yeah. If you go on my website, I have a good book review. If you go under the book and movie review section, I wrote it years ago. I wrote it actually back in 2015. It's called Willis Cardo, Champion of the American Right. And it's a book review of, what's the author's name? Let me actually pull it up. George Michael. Yeah. George Michael. I think he's University of Florida or Virginia, maybe. Anyways, he was a university professor, like a mainstream, like academic, and he wrote a book, Willis Cardo and the American Far Right. And it's actually a pretty objective, straightforward biography of Cardo and his activities in like the right wing sphere, his publishing activities, his political organizing. Like I mentioned, he did found the Barnes Review. He founded American Free Press. Prior to American Free Press, he had a really, really popular and influential called The Spotlight. Exactly. Yeah. And The Spotlight was a very popular, you know, widely distributed newspaper back in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s even. And then it kind of rebranded, if I'm not mistaken, after a lawsuit back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, right? I think actually American Free Press was actually founded in 2001. And, it's basically picked up where The Spotlight left off. It's more or less, it's similar. I mean, it's a little bit different, obviously, but kind of picks up in that same spirit. And, you know, he's a very interesting man, you know, had a very interesting career for sure. A very influential career, you know, publishing and sort of organizing politically, raising money, funding and founding various projects. He actually founded originally the Institute for Historical Review, which was, you know, another sort of major revisionist outlet that's kind of shied away from that sort of territory lately, it seems like. But he's excellent, and the Barnes Review is outstanding. I mean, it's like I said, a bi-monthly journal. The last issue, actually, the September-October 2020 issue, is called "Defending American Heroes," and it's basically a defense of all these. Well, a defense generally of American history, but you know, we've seen all of these statues. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We've seen all of these statues come down. We've seen all of these great, legendary American heroes and patriots be totally demonized and slandered by the media, by the radical left. And it's just an outrage. And this issue really kind of puts things in perspective.
You see that in the Protocols of Zion, right? Like the Jews and communists, we want to tear down the icons of any society, their statues, their icons, whatever they believe in. We want to go for that and tear it down, whatever excuse works. That's the rationale, I think, from the Protocols of Zion, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's right out of the protocols. It's right out of, the communist agenda, which, you know, basically is a Jewish plot to overthrow and destroy, you know, a nation, as was the case in Russia and Eastern Europe, and now in America. Yeah. You know, we have a modern, you know, neo-Marxist revolution taking place in America, and it's been going on for decades now.
That's another great thing about Hitler. People don't realize when he made the attack on the Soviet Union, June 22nd, 1941, it was a preemptive strike because the communists, Stalin, they're preparing to invade all of Western Europe, and he had no choice but to try to protect Europe. And people just say, well, he was a crazy man. Two-front war, just invaded the Soviet Union because he wanted to take over the world. So that's one of the most important things for people to realize. The communists are trying to take over the entire world. They're after Europe and the world. So Hitler, he saved Western Europe.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I completely agree. And, you know, what you just said, that sort of idea, that sort of narrative, that would be found in the Barnes Review. You know, this is these are topics that the Barnes Review has covered and written about and published, you know, very scholarly articles about over the years. But this last issue is particularly important in my mind. It's an extended issue, so it's actually, let me see here, I got it right here next to me. Yeah, it's like almost 150 pages, so it's like a small book basically.
Wow, it's big.
Yeah, and it's really, really good. It's got great artwork, great photos, great articles. And it's again, like I said, a publication definitely worth supporting and actually subscribing to. And the Barnes Review also sells a number of revisionist books as well. So, yeah, it's a great outlet. I'm very, you know, proud and really honored to be associated with it, to be able to help, you know, edit and contribute to the magazine. It's really an honor and quite
a privilege. How many years have you been with them, writing and editing with them?
Well, lately, I've actually been editing really the past year. Prior to that, I really wasn't editing anything. I would submit articles from time to time. I didn't really have too many published over the years. It wasn't like in every issue I was being published. Although now that's the case, I'm basically contributing articles every issue and also helping Paul Angel edit the paper or edit the magazine as well. And that, like I said, that's been about the past year. I've been contributing to American Free Press since 2013. So a little over 7 years at this point. And the Barnes Review, basically the same, although I haven't contributed as regularly as I have for American Free Press.
Are they the same owners, the two of them?
No. You know, honestly, I'm not sure exactly how the ownership works. I refer to them as basically sister publications. I mean, yeah. Paul Angel is the executive editor of the Barnes Review. And he's the art editor of American Free Press. So he, I mean, he basically puts together the publications. But the American Free Press is actually the chief executive editor is Chris Petherick, and he's not really that involved at all with the Barnes Review. So it's separate in that regard. As far as like the ownership, I'm honestly I don't even know, to be honest with you.
Okay, but it's kind of alternate press compared to the main media. How do you think of whatever our chances of ever influencing humanity, since the truth is always marginalized in the alternate press? The mainstream is all Jewish owned pretty much all over the world. So remember you talked about trying to stay sane. Like I stay sane because I take refuge in the law of karma, being a Buddhist. I think, you know, if you're a good person with good karma, you'll move on to a good rebirth, even if the world goes down the toilet. Well, what keeps you sane, John? What keeps you inspired and keeps you happy?
Well, having faith in Christ and you know, being, you know, having that sort of religious understanding and background and knowing, you know, of course, I'm not a perfect person. Nobody is, but my heart's in the right place and I try to do what's right and I try to stand up for the truth. And, you know, just let the world know, look, what's going on is not okay. And it's not okay for us to sit here and be lied to and to be, you know, insulted and degraded the way we are. I mean, especially now, like to me, I mean, even the very idea of like putting on a face mask is just a total insult, spit in your face. You know, you're a total slave. You're a total idiot thinking that this is going to do anything.
I just tell people I have a medical exemption. It works in stores here in Vancouver, Canada. So they have a medical exemption. And legally, they're not allowed to ask you what it is. They just have to accept it. I get away with that. But it is insulting. But even like 100 years ago, they're still lying to us. Then it still seems like good people can still live their lives. There's still good people in the world. And people are surviving. Maybe the future will be okay. We don't know. It seems like doom and gloom, you know, like they're going to take over the entire world. But who knows? I'm still optimistic, but the future is certain. Do you still have a sense of optimism that just do what's right and just live your life?
Yes, very much so. Absolutely. I mean, you know, and that's the thing. Like, I think being plugged in and connected to like, even like following politics almost to me anymore is almost just a waste of time. I mean, I basically know the score. I basically know what's going on. And trying to stay up with every little scandal and every little detail is not, it's not worth the time. It's not worth the energy. It's not healthy mentally, I don't think, for most people. But yeah, I mean, I try to just focus on what I can do in my own personal realm, stand up for what's right, try to be a good person, try to live a decent, honest life, work hard, stay focused. I mean, for the longest time, I mean, when they had everything closed down, you know, I wasn't like working out, you know, and I work out like all the time. At least I had in the past. And then when all this, you know, the lockdown and all this coronavirus restrictions came into place, it was really, really tough, you know, and I think it's been tough for a lot of people. The past few months I've kind of gotten back into the groove of things and man, I feel so much better being able to work out pretty much every day.
Yeah, a lot of people lonely, a lot of people down, isolated, depressed, suicide rates it up. That's part of their intention to demoralize.
Oh yeah, man. That's a big part of this. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see some of the statistics. Yeah, you're right. You know, people are depressed. People are, you know, like drinking more, doing drugs, like that sort of stuff. And yeah, it's not good. I mean,
domestic disputes, domestic violence. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody has, you know, life is not easy. You know, everybody has problems and issues and obstacles to overcome. But, you know, that's to me, I just try to stay grounded and knowing that I'm on the right side and knowing that I am standing up for what's right. And, you know, I don't know everything. I'm not perfect. You know, I make mistakes. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to do what's right. I'm trying to stand up for what's right. And I'm trying to tell the world and, you know, my friends and family, like, look, you know, we're being lied to in a major way about a number of different issues. And it's just, to me personally, unacceptable. And I will not stand by and not, you know, just act like everything's okay. You know, I'm going to at least write about it. I'm going to express myself and say what I think needs to be said. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think we need people in the public space saying these things and running for office and gaining actual political power. And, you know, that's a very, very challenging thing to do. But ultimately, that's what it's going to take if we're ever going to, you know, implement any legitimate changes politically. It's a tall task. I mean, I don't know exactly how to go about it. I mean, there have been a lot of people, especially recently, that have run for office on like sort of a populist America First platform and have made some headway, made some gains. But at the end of the day, you know, it's tough. It's just a long struggle for sure. It's going to be a long struggle.
Yeah, I sometimes ask my guests for solutions. It's kind of tough to put people on the spot and ask, well, what's your solution? I don't have a solution to it. I mean, I raise awareness like you. You speak the truth, you do something. So at least you feel good. You've got good karma, or as the Bible says, as you sow, you shall reap. You're doing something good. You're earning a heavenly rebirth or something. We don't have a solution, but we do what we can. So it makes us feel better that we're doing something.
Yeah. Well, and I think also, you know, again, getting back to Trump, I think it's also good to recognize that he, you know, Trump is obviously not going to be any sort of, he's not going to fix everything. He's probably not even going to be able to really accomplish a lot of the things that he's run on. I mean, we've seen his first term, his first 4 years, he hasn't accomplished much really. I mean, I think he has made some gains, but overall, you know, we still got a long way to go, and he's been stymied and prevented from implementing a lot of his policies. But I think the more important thing is that he has at least opened up the political space, opened up the discussion, you know, again, getting back to the media, demonizing and criticizing the media and delegitimizing the media is huge. I mean, it's absolutely huge. And for that alone, that reason alone, that's why I want to see him reelected.
Is because that'll be a legacy of all American presidents. The whole idea of fake news, it's something new in the whole psyche of America. But with Hillary Clinton or prior to that, we sort of went along with the media, but it really lays it bare to the average person that we are really being lied to. You just cannot trust ABC, NBC, CBS.
Yes, so that's a benefit. Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, again, for that reason alone is enough for me to support him and to want to see him get in there. And you know what? I genuinely think that he has good instincts and that he does mean well and that he really does believe the things that he says. I think he's a very genuine person. At least he comes across that way to me. Maybe he is obviously a good actor and he's good at what he does, you know.
I think he is genuine. Do you think he's got a choice between the globalist Jews like Biden and Hillary versus the Israeli first Jews? In order to get elected president, you have to pick your Jews. It's kind of a cynical way of looking at it. Like, he could damage the world slower by supporting the Israeli first Jews, or we can damage the world faster with the globalist Jews as president of the United States. So he has to make a compromise just because the Jews are so powerful. He's only one person in the office of the president. That's kind of how I cut him some slack. And he didn't go to war with Iran. He hadn't started a war. They really pushed him into doing that, and he didn't do that. What do you think? Yeah.
No, I think that's a good way of looking at it. I think, you know, I almost think that he actually really does, like, believe a lot of this stuff about Israel and how we need to support them. And, you know, I mean, like most people his age, like most mainstream Republicans, they totally go along with that idea that Israel is our greatest ally and we need to support them and we need to move the embassy. I mean, he like brags as if that's like a huge accomplishment for his administration when, you know, nobody cares about that, at least not like average, like America First patriots.
And why would they care about that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I could care less about the Middle East. I mean, I want us to be totally out of the Middle East. They can deal with their own problems. I want nothing to do with any of these countries. I mean, we can engage in trade and in diplomacy and, you know, maybe, you know, they can study here. We can study there, stuff like that. But I mean, we do not need to be interfering in these countries. We certainly don't need to be going to war in these countries. It's just totally ridiculous and out of control. And that should, I mean, really, that's an America First foreign policy. So I'd like to see that. I mean, I could care less about what goes on in Israel. And I mean, I support the Palestinians. I sympathize with their plight. But at the end of the day, look, this is their problem. I mean, I'm concerned about what's going on in America. You know, I care first and foremost about what's going on here and what's going on in other white countries. That's where my loyalties lie. I mean, I wish everybody in the Middle East the best, but there's a lot of problems. And I think a lot of
people are under attack with immigration. Yeah, we're under attack.
Exactly, yeah. Well, and I think a lot of the problems in the Middle East are exacerbated and compounded by our policies. So it's like, look, let's get out of the region. We don't need to be over there. We don't need to be interfering in these countries and overthrowing their leaders. Again, all at the behest of the Zionists and the neocons and, you know, these Israeli geopolitical and military strategists. This is nonsense. I mean, we don't need to be doing any of these things. None of this benefits America. It's all to benefit and advance Jewish and Israeli interests in the region. And it's just getting old. I mean, it's been old, obviously, for well over a decade now, almost two decades now, you know, really since 9/11. But even before 9/11, we were doing these sorts of, counterproductive, just ridiculous, stupid, absurd, immoral policies in the Middle East. And it's like I said, it's definitely getting old and it needs to be stopped. And we need to focus on what's going on here and make our country great again. I mean, my God, I live in California and you should see the homeless problem out here. It is, you want to talk about a real public health crisis. That is a real public health crisis.
Yeah, I was in Los Angeles in November, did a lot of videos there. I saw a lot of homeless blacks in tents just all over the streets. It's shocking compared to Vancouver, where I live.
Oh, it's, Brian, it's on a level that can't even be described. It's so bad. It's truly a third world country. You know, I mean, you have the staggering, you know, wealth gaps and not only the wealth gaps, but just like you'll be in like a decent neighborhood and then you go outside and you look on your street and there's like homeless people everywhere, you know, just strewn about laying in the middle of the sidewalk. It's out of control. And this, like I said, this is an actual public health crisis, not this fake, you know, coronavirus pandemic, which is totally absurd and nonsense and just totally politically manufactured.
Oh, yeah.
So it's ridiculous. And these are real problems that need to be solved. And there is no, I don't even know what you would do aside from, I mean, this is going to sound harsh, but I mean, these people have to be like rounded up and sent somewhere and put in some sort of camp where they're either going to be made to work or get clean, or because most of them, I don't know what the percentage is, but I mean, from what I can see, a lot of these people are on drugs or they're alcoholics.
Yeah, they need some kind of care. Just, they shouldn't just be left crazy alone on drugs.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a huge problem that, you know, there's, you know, the county and the city and the state, they want to just like throw more money at the problem. And it's just a huge, gigantic financial black hole. You know, there's no rehabilitating the vast majority of these people on the streets. They don't want to be rehabilitated. They can't be rehabilitated. So it's a very sad situation, but it's,
I guess international Jewish power wants us to have those problems, right? We have all these systemic problems because we're basically controlled by Jews. How high up do you think it goes in terms of Jewish power throughout the entire world? Do you think there's a center to it, or is it just everywhere? Like, how do you regard the organization of Jewish power in the world?
That's a good question. That's a deep question. I think, I mean, if you look at like, I mean, you look at any, the, you look at the way political power works on any level, from the local level all the way up to the international level, there's various individuals and groups and coalitions that are vying for political power, right? And I think if you look at the federal level, even the state level in most states, and again, the local level in most places, organized Jewish interests prevail, and they are the most organized, they're the most wealthy, the most cohesive group out there vying for political power, and they get what they want because they're good at what they do. They have a strong sense of identity and purpose. They're very well funded. And, you know, that's why they have that. That's why they wield and exert so much power in our societies. And I think it works that way on any level, you know, the international level all the way down to the local level.
They're like every single country of the world to some extent, like maybe mysterious in other countries. But do you think there's a central location? Like, is it the Committee of 300, or is it the Rashaf family, or is it Israel, or is it diaspora? How, do you think it's organized from the top down? Central power.
Again, that's another good question. I mean, I tend to think that a lot of these elites running the show, and you really see this on display with this COVID hoax, you know, the way this has all been rolled out. You look at like
they're all
like on the same page.
Countries on the same page. When does that happen?
Well, and that's how it works. It's like, in order to get into that elite level, you have to be, you know, in on it, so to speak. You have to be in that club. Maybe it's a secret society. I mean, I know people have alleged that. I don't know all the details, but it certainly seems to me that this is very, very well coordinated, and that in order to even get into that sort of position of power, you have to be connected and sort of tied into the right people. And again, you know, you look at like the COVID hoax, you look at Fauci, you look at all these people in the media making these decisions, coming out with these mandates and recommendations and all these other ridiculous ideas. And they're all friends with the same people. They're all tied into the same Bill Gates and Soros connected organizations. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And there's a lot of good researchers out there exposing this. There's a lady on YouTube, Amazing Polly. I think she's actually a Canadian as well. I don't know.
Yeah, I think she's around here somewhere. But I always wanted to get in touch with her. She's very good, really good.
Yeah, she's really good at, you know? Yeah, she's really good at breaking this down, and she's done a lot of good research into this. So, I mean, yeah, that's to me, I think that's how it kind of works, is these people are basically all in the same club. They're all on the same team. And in order to even get, again, like to even get to that position, you have to be like in that sort of network that's going along with this whole agenda.
I remember in our very first interview together, you said, we're not even allowed to feel the team like white people. We can't even feel the team. It's not politically correct. So here we are against that massive international connection, and they can print trillions of dollars since they got the Federal Reserve and the... So that's what we're up against.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you think about like politics in America or any other Western country. And I mean, there's an organized group for every single minority. Blacks, Jews, of course, homosexuals, transgenders. I mean, literally every single minority. And then you have white people who are just, you know, there's no cohesive identity. There's no team. There's no organization. There's nothing. You know, and sadly, most whites don't even recognize that they should be fielding a team to compete in this political battle.
Whites are anti-white. Probably the majority of whites are sympathetic to minorities themselves because they're so liberally brainwashed. You know?
And why is that? Yeah, it's because of fake history.
And fake news.
Exactly. Most of it is fake history.
Yeah, fake history.
Whether it's the fake, you know, slavery narrative, the Holocaust. I mean, all of these anti-white
colonization is all our fault. You know?
When in reality, you look at it, it's like we should be proud of these things. I mean, we should be proud that we founded the United States. We founded Canada. We built these great countries, these great
all
nations.
All these inventions that we've done. Yeah, the white Europeans, all the inventions.
Yeah. And I mean, the idea that slavery was like this oppressive, evil institution is just frankly not true. And again, I know that sounds very controversial and maybe harsh to like your average normie, but it is. I mean, you look and in the Barnes Review has covered this as well. In fact, there is an article, I think, in this last issue I was mentioning. Let me see. I think it was this issue. Slavery in the words of slaves. And I mean, you read like some of these journals that they were actually interviewed by what was the name of that organization led by, it was under the FDR administration. They were basically paying people to go out and interview former slaves.
Oh wow.
And transcribe what they had to say. Yeah, and it's a fascinating, I mean, these people, were not brutally treated. They were treated as like part of the extended family, as like a valuable piece of labor in the overall operation of the farm or plantation or whatever they were doing. They were not mistreated. They were not raped and murdered, at least systemically, which is the way it's presented by the, you know, by the mainstream historical establishment. I mean, it just was not this oppressive institution.
And compare that to Africa. Remember, Muhammad Ali said, I'm really glad one of my ancestors got on that ship and came over to America. I mean, what did they say in Africa? Tribal warfare, killing each other, you know? They got an education in the United States, a good Christian upbringing, you know? They were doing fine until, like the Jews turned the box against the whites and inflamed the situation.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. Well, and I mean, you even think about like E. Michael Jones has written and talked about this pretty extensively, how, you know, like rap music and the integration of cities like totally destroyed black culture, like authentic, wholesome black Christian culture. And it's so true, you know?
Yeah, look at the blacks in the 1940s and 50s in America compared to gangster rap now and the crime and the music scene and rap music and all of that.
Yeah. And rap music is basically has always been run and managed by Jews. Going back to the NWA and pretty much any of these other mainstream, you know, popular influential rappers. And this is something that the Jewish news will actually report.
Yeah.
And what I mean by the Jewish news, I mean like explicitly Jewish news publications like the Jewish Telegraph Agency or the Forward or Haaretz or the Times of Israel. I mean, you will see articles published in these publications openly talking about how Jewish executives and managers basically have run the black gangster rap industry from the beginning.
Yeah, they'll tell this to each other in Israel amongst themselves, so the people, they don't understand what they're doing, but they won't tell the goy in our papers in America so much.
Well, if you report it, if you comment on it or point it out, then it's considered anti-Semitic, right? That's the way it works. That's the way the total Orwellian, you know, just to me, it's just childish. It's like, look, we're adults here. We can talk about whatever we want. We can talk about legitimate topics
and
subjects and use our own brains to think critically and independently about whatever we want. And the Jews basically say, no, not when it comes to us.
Yeah, well, the one thing we have the truth, right? You and I, the one thing they don't have is the truth. And nothing offends the Jews more than the truth.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man. Gee, we're coming up on an hour here. I don't want to take up too much of your time unless you something else you'd like to share or any other thoughts. But, we don't have a solution, but we're still alive. We're still in the fight. It's good after you were my very first guest 5 years ago, and you and I were still in the fight. So life is still good. It's worth living.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. It was good to catch up with you. It's always a good conversation we have.
Yeah, you're welcome back anytime. I know you're a busy man, but you're welcome back anytime. And I like what you're doing, and I really recommend people read you in American Free Press and the Barnes Review, and there's links below this video.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon then.
Okay. Thanks, John. Appreciate being back on the show. All the best.
No problem. Thank you.